I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for this coffee.
Good morning. Good morning. It's great to stay up late. Good morning. Good morning to you and you and you and you.
What is that?
Singing in the Rain. Debbie Reynolds.
Oh my God, I'm so embarrassed.
The Queen.
I've never seen it.
Okay. Well, in 5 years from now, when we both have a free day to hang out and watch a movie together, let's watch that.
Man, there's, fantastic. I mean, the gaps in my classics. Knowledge.
Film watching?
Yeah.
This is actually why I'm going on a TV hiatus, because I stopped catching up on the classics that I haven't seen.
Was that, were you in a habit of that? Like a good pattern of
classic watching? When I kind of, all throughout my life, my mom was good and we watched a lot of Turner together and stuff. And then when I went to film school, the shit got real and I started really watching it as a student. And then when I moved to LA, it just became all about that TV and just, plus binging started. And so it was just TV all the time.
Right.
And there are fewer and fewer movies in the theaters that I feel like seeing these days. Not a big superhero tentpole person.
Tentpole?
Like tentpole film.
Tentpole.
No. Pup tent? No, I know what I'm saying.
What's tentpole?
Like a franchise movie, like this is going to be the first of a million Marvel movies, huh, kind of thing. Yeah.
Learn something new.
Wow. That's our phrase of the day.
Thanks.
Yeah. But yes, right. Deadpool is also one
as,
of those.
As a tentpole movie.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, but I need to start like going back and watching the Criterion Collection films.
So when you do that, are you like, is your mindset like, this is like edifying and like, as opposed to like, this is a night of enjoyment and pleasure?
Yeah. So I realize looking back that really good films feed me more creatively than good television in a tangible way that then comes back out of me in the stuff that I'm creating.
Cool.
Good TV, I think it's great and it's good for my mind and I enjoy it, but I don't regurgitate it in a inspiring way.
Why
the way
think,
that good films do.
I mean, and I mean, I love this topic. It could go on forever. Do you think that that's because, I mean, do you think that that's changing in the filmmaking of TV and like that could, like TV could inspire you?
I don't know. There's still, I don't know what it is. This is a very recent revelation for me. Hmm. So that's a great question.
Yeah.
We'll
because
have to revisit.
I feel we could go on about certain things ad nauseum, you know, but I mean,
everything.
Of course, like, right. And I guess maybe your point is that the newer films, it's maybe harder to find those things to latch on to and be inspired by.
Yeah.
In a way, I mean, that's certainly there. It's just you have to sort of weed out.
I don't know. I still think watching TV in general is just more of an escape kind of thing.
Yeah.
It just feels good and I like being lost for a few hours. But seeing a good movie, like I watched a French film this week that was directed by Melanie Laurent and it was a hard movie. You know, it's not a movie that you're ever in the mood to watch. It was like really intense. It's about a female friendship in high school that goes really wrong and it gets pretty fucked up. But at the end, even though I was horrified and I was like gasping, I felt so turned on creatively by that. You know, it like really made me feel something that made me then want to like the next day write something really good. And TV rarely has that effect
on
me, even when I love it. It's, I don't know, it's
That's
not that same
awesome.
Sucker punch.
Right. I mean, I guess it's partially about the condensed nature of it. And probably. Every shot counts. But that the way that you just described it reminds me so much of a musician practicing, because it's not necessarily the fun part or what you want to be doing, but it's the goods and it gets you there.
Yeah.
I don't know how much it's what leads to inspiration. Like, I don't think you have a really good practice session and then say, I can't wait to go write. Mm-hmm. I guess that comes from, you know.
It's not always that conscious.
Right. But watching a movie that's as hard as that, mm-hmm. it's not like, oh, this is fun. It's work. And then you feel things from it. And that's really cool.
And I think that's a practice that we're used to when we're kids and you're forced to read books that are challenging mm-hmm. and study things that are challenging, and you don't always love it, but at the end you get why that was worth something, and it's made you grow and it's made you become something you weren't before.
Yeah.
Then you're an adult and you're tired and life is wearing you out and you just want to fucking relax.
Right. So like, and not be pushed. When do you do that?
You have to do it yourself, and you have to say, no more Netflix or Amazon this month. I'm just going to watch old movies.
Watch Criterion movies. Well, yeah.
I don't know.
So
we'll see how long this lasts, but that's my plan.
Do you do like, I mean, I feel like a lot of filmmakers or people into this, like, it's like you make a routine of it. Like, it's like once a week, I'm going to do this, or X amount of films.
And there is no great filmmaker that I admire who is not a serious student of filmmaking.
Right.
They just go hand in hand. Mm. You have to know what came before and you have to.
Yeah. I'm trying to do that with documentary. Well, I was in a really good pattern of watching a lot of documentaries. Yeah. And
you have a lot of references.
Yeah.
Like ready to go.
I try to keep notes on stuff.
Yeah.
But a lot of times it's like, I don't really want to watch this. I like documentaries, but I like escapism too, you know?
I never watch documentaries. It's a problem.
It's
a problem for me. Yeah. And now that I'm starting to write a mockumentary, I have to start
watching mockumentaries.
Yeah. Like Spinal Tap is on tap this weekend.
Good one.
Yeah.
Good one.
Important reference.
I've seen pieces of it. Okay. I haven't even seen the whole thing. I've seen pieces of it.
Yeah.
And I feel like
the classic.
Yeah, it's totally the classic. And I mean, I should definitely finish it at some point. But there's a way in which, and tell me, I mean, it's probably different with serious films, but like that I sort of get it. With documentary, there's like something that I want to sort of understand about the filmmaking.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, okay, I like understand the filmmaking here and what they're doing, and I don't really need to finish it. But it's probably different with narrative.
Yeah.
It's not like you need to sort of see it through. And that's probably true with documentary. I'm just being lazy.
Yeah, no. Or like those aren't good ones if you are even having that thought.
Well, I sometimes turn on things like topics that I'm not terribly interested in, but I want to just see how it's sort of handled.
Right.
I don't know.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Well, that's the student in you too.
Yeah.
You're watching the process of it more than the subject.
Definitely.
Because you are a documentarian also.
Right. So trying to figure out structure and how they've like approached something that
you don't necessarily need
ways.
To see the end of that story. Right. You just see how they're capturing it and then you make a note of that.
Exactly.
Yeah. I get it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you had your camera turned on our guest today, Sarah Verspril of Pure Bathing Culture.
The best.
She was awesome.
She was so awesome. We had an incredible conversation.
Yeah. We had no preconceived notion of what she was like before she walked in. And the second she walked in,
the warmest, loveliest.
Yeah.
Most
it was
open,
like,
amazing.
Oh, you're one of us. Mm-hmm. Let's just chill. You and I were being like kind of weirdly contentious at the beginning, which
that was weird.
She got
I'm
a really
sorry.
Big kick out of. No, it was me.
No, I don't know. I said something weird. Yeah. But it was like instant. I think we would like to have her on as a co-host one time.
Totally.
That would be amazing.
She'd be great.
That would be awesome.
And like, my grandfather can't tell the difference between your voice and my voice. So I feel like if we added a third person, some people would have no idea.
We would
anyway.
Just meld into
just
one
another
super
cool
soul sister.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Like a superhero.
Right.
Like that. Or like a transformer. So she was great. And her partner in life and in music, Dan, was also here. Mm-hmm. And he sat quietly in the control room during our conversation, but then came out and played two beautiful songs with her.
Mm-hmm.
And they were amazing. And then we went to their show at Irving Plaza.
They're incredible.
So good.
So good.
We were in the photo pit, so we saw them super up close and personal.
Mm-hmm.
We were so close that she couldn't even see us, she said. She was like, I was looking for you. We were like, being spit on by you.
Yeah. and then welcomed us back. And
into the green room.
Right. Just so lovely. Wonderful night. Wonderful group.
Yeah. So I think you guys will enjoy this conversation because it's very honest. And that's all you ever hope for. Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's get to it with Sarah.
Here we are. We did it on this rainy day.
Uh-huh.
Super rainy, but not as rainy as Portland.
Misty, I would say.
Misty. No, it's rainy.
It's actually, I was saying...
Please decide this for us.
Okay. First of all...
Let's fight about literally everything we talk about today. We have a moderator.
Great start. Yeah. Okay.
It's actually pretty like Portland's rain. Pretty much like Portland's rain. Because Portland, it just rains for like 8 months.
Yeah.
And then, but it's like misting. It never really like pours rain.
Yeah.
So
it's just constantly that.
Yeah. You don't
like
need
never a release.
You don't really need an umbrella, but you also like might get really depressed.
Yeah.
Right.
So, but you can get really like you can have to wear a rain jacket with a hood and you just wear that around. It's actually
sounds kind of nice.
It's like
cozy.
Nice weather to stay inside. And,
yeah. It's great.
Right. And
especially compared to New York where you have like a gnarly winter with snow.
Yeah.
But it really is like it only gets down to like 40 degrees and it's raining all winter. And to me, that's just not that bad.
No.
Yeah.
And then it's sunny all summer.
Oh, that's
beautiful.
Good.
Yeah.
See, the worst is like in LA when it's sunny all the time and then you just feel like an asshole every time you don't go outside.
Yeah, you're like,
you
what?
Can't have a day off. So you're like, I'm a piece of shit. Why am I on my couch when it's 80 and sunny? And that's literally every day.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah, it sucks.
Yeah, that does suck.
Yeah.
It makes doing work sound really hard.
Yes.
Yeah.
Also that.
Yeah.
Now you like go to work outside at a cafe, right. But I don't know. There's something about trying to work outside. I can't do it. The writing doesn't come as easily.
You can't see the computer screen.
Yeah. Yes, that's a big problem.
Yeah. No.
Totally.
It's stupid.
Not productive.
No.
So New York and Portland, it's good.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You can see your screen. You're right. Inside.
You're inside. You have no reason to go out. It's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's true.
So is that the key to your productivity as a band?
Kind of. Well, we moved to Portland from New York like 5 years ago, and we kind of moved there to do the band because we had just started writing like a few songs together. We lived in Brooklyn and Greenpoint, and we were always on tour with another band. We played in the band Vetiver for 2 record cycles, and we were never in New York, never home. And the opportunity came up to move. My cousin lives in Portland, and we also had these few songs, and our friend Richard Swift, who recorded our first 2 records, lives in Cottage Grove, Oregon, which is like right south of Eugene.
Uh-huh.
And he was like, come out and record. And we were like, okay. And we were kind of looking at plane tickets, and then our lease was coming up, and then we were like, I guess we should just move to the West Coast. Like,
awesome.
Why not? You know? So Portland has really been, it's been an amazing spot for us to kind of incubate and be really hermity. And we have a great space in our house, in our attic, where we can work and make music, and our band rehearses there. So it's kind of, it's
like
pretty awesome.
Yeah,
yeah. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah. But then when you come back to New York, do you have any feelings of, oh, I miss New York?
So many feelings.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. All the feelings.
Uh-huh.
It's intense. It's crazy. I'm so nostalgic for it here.
Yeah.
And we talk about it all the time. Like on the way over here, Dan's like, I think I could live here again. I'm like, I know, right? Like we should, you know, but I don't know.
Well, that makes sense. You know, I spent a little time there. I spent a little time here. And
I know.
You're gonna, you know. You need a break from each, it sounds.
It's true, because New York's
amazing.
Is that
a thing, though, going from New York to
Portland?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, other cities it is a thing, but not necessarily even keeping a place, but just like living there for a while, living here.
I mean,
it's
not an easy commute.
Yeah, no.
That's for sure.
Yeah. And I feel like, I mean, the weather is maybe similar. It's not like going from New York to LA where you're escaping one drastic thing to another.
Yep. Right.
Yeah.
Yep. You're not at the beach.
No.
Right. No, you're not. Absolutely not.
But I don't know. Maybe you should try it out.
Yeah, maybe we should.
Maybe that's the key.
I love New York. I'm so... It was a wonderful city for me to live in for years. It really like took me in this way that was...
Brooklyn specifically?
Well, I lived in Brooklyn always.
Uh-huh.
But then I worked in Manhattan. Like my first jobs were in Midtown. Like
doing what?
Yeah.
The
first job I had when I got out of college was I was the assistant to the director of marketing for a Broadway production company. Yeah.
Is that cool?
Yeah, it was really crazy because I just got the job. I was like desperate for a job. I had no money. I was like sitting around all summer and like no one would hire me and it was really bad. And my roommate and I would just like sit around and put our feet in ice buckets because it was so hot. That's like what I remember about that summer until I got a job, is because I had just eating ice cream and like icing. It was super weird. Anyway, but then another mutual friend was like, I know this person that's the office manager. So I was only supposed to do a temp job for like 2 weeks. But then my boss there was like a little gnarly and she had trouble like keeping assistants. But for some reason, she liked me.
Okay.
And so after 2 weeks, she just hired me as her assistant. So it was just like 21. And she was like, do you want to work for me?
Sweet.
Like salary. And I was like, wait, what? I just went to jazz school. Like, why am I?
It was doing Broadway.
Yeah, it was super marketing. Crazy. Yeah, it was really weird. But it was, I learned a lot. I learned a lot about like the how the hierarchy works there and like how people are really intense. And
that shit at the time feels like you're totally selling out and what is my life and oh my God. But then later you find that it's the most useful thing in the world.
I learned so much. Yeah.
Just marketing in general.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, because I had to do some marketing and PR stuff. That was like my first years out of college. And I eventually ran away from that because it wasn't at all what I wanted to do. But now I'm so glad that I have that background, because people who don't, you know, they have to depend on other people to tell them how to do that stuff.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, it's good to have it in your back pocket.
Yeah, it's really interesting, especially something on that level, which is just a huge deal. Like,
yeah. Was there social media at that time? No.
Not really. Yeah.
It was all
print ads.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
So different.
Yeah.
What year or years?
2003.
Okay.
2004. Okay.
Cool.
Yeah. Where were you in school?
William Patterson University.
Okay. Studying jazz?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, yep. Yeah. New Jersey.
And so you had always had aspirations of being a musician. And then after college, you're like, okay, well now.
Yeah, I wanted to be a jazz singer. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, I'm going to be a jazz singer. My parents were like, okay.
So like you grew up doing.
I loved jazz. Yeah, I did. I really did. I played trumpet. Like since I was from really young and piano and stuff. And then,
a jazz family? Where did you get that from?
No, my cousin who's older, who's a drummer who plays with lots of awesome bands in Vetiver, and he plays with Cass McCombs. And, he was just super into jazz. He was like 5 years older than me. And he showed me when I was in like, maybe like sixth grade, he showed me a Chet Baker record and I played trumpet. And then Chet Baker is also a singer, and it just like blew my mind. Blend, I was like, this is so amazing. And then, do you guys remember, did you ever have like those BMG or like those CD like order things?
Well, yeah, they came to my house all the time and I would fill them out, but my mom would not let me mail them in.
Okay. My mom, I don't know why, because she never let me do anything, but she let me order CDs. From like this jazz catalog. I don't know why, because like she was super strict about everything. And like it was at the time, I remember being like, 8 CDs? And she was like, okay. Like, I don't know.
Wow.
It was super weird. But so I like amassed this like jazz CD collection.
Yeah.
I was like listening to like John Coltrane when I was in middle school. Just like super random.
Uh-huh.
I did not know anything about pop music at the time.
Did you see that Ethan Hawke movie?
No.
I've heard about it.
I want to see it.
Yeah. I haven't seen it yet. I'm interested. I heard him do a long interview about it, and he was talking about Chet Baker and how he wasn't that innovative. You know, he was just kind of palatable, which is kind of what was so special about him, which I thought was interesting.
It's true. I mean, in that idiom, he's definitely like, especially of all the scope of jazz at that time, he was more like a pop, like more like pop singer and pop expressionist or whatever.
Yeah. But, anyway, sidetrack. So help me.
And at the time, so your mom was like totally down to buy you all the CDs, and you were like a jazz nerd.
Yeah.
But as far as singing, were you like, were you exploring that at that time?
Then I heard Ella Fitzgerald and I was like, this is my jam. And then I got tons of CDs and I would just sing along to like all those records, like Sarah Vaughan, Billie Holiday, Ella Fitzgerald. And then later I was like, I got really into R&B, and like my mom had like a Stevie Wonder or Songs in the Key of Life, and I would listen to that all the time. So, I mean, I really got into it by just singing along to recordings.
Yeah.
And then when I tried to get on stage and sing with the jazz band in high school, I had so much stage fright that I sounded terrible.
Aww.
Yeah, it was awful.
Did you grow up in Jersey?
In Rochester, New York.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. It was like, I was like, yeah, I'm going to sing with the jazz band. And like, I got up there, I was like, it was so terrifying. Aww. I had horrible stage fright for so long.
It was like one performance.
Yeah. And it was like, and like no one was helping me with the fact that I was freaking out. It was like, I was like a freshman in high school.
Oh man.
It was like, got That's to so sing with the jazz band. It was like my dream.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But I was just like
usually people don't sing with the jazz bands in school.
Well, my band director, he was really cool. And he like, he knew that I wanted to do it.
Uh-huh.
But I had to sing this really bad song. And my boyfriend's mom at the time was like, yeah, you were really playing with your dress. That's Aww. What she said. And I was like, oh, like so heartbreaking.
What was the song? Do you remember?
It was from the musical Jekyll and Hyde. And it was called, I think it was called Someone Like You.
Don't you love
oh
that
my
show?
God, I do love that show. Okay. And I love that song.
It was in a really bad key for me.
It's
and
also
I
not
could
a jazzy
not,
song.
No, I know.
At all.
I know.
Like, that's crazy.
I was begging him. I was like, please, like, not this song. He's like, no, you're
that's
doing this
super
song.
Ballad. Like,
yeah. Like a power
like
ballad.
Like emotional power ballad.
Like a 14-year-old.
That's so weird.
Yeah, I know. It was terrible.
It's funny how that show comes up.
I know.
On this
is the second time we've talked about that
really?
Show and that song. It's really random.
Oh, that's amazing. I love
that. Yeah. But no, that's super nerve-wracking. So did it set you off? Like, did it put a bad taste in your mouth?
Yeah, well, kind of. I always just wanted to do it so bad. And I loved singing so much. And so I tried again the next year and we did like I think it was God Bless the Child, like Billie Holiday, like, and that went much better. But he also made me do Ain't No Mountain High Enough, which Ooh. Was like, dude.
Okay. It's a range.
Yeah.
There was a talking part.
Come on.
You have to be
you
like,
did the talking
yeah.
part?
Yeah. Yeah. And I remember my mom being like, you really made that talking part sound pretty reasonable. That's what she said.
What about these things?
That's all we want from our Motown songs.
I can't believe
this
what we're talking about. What?
No, like those things are so formative. Yeah, like when you're like, oh, you're playing with your dress. It's like, okay, never play with, never, don't fidget with my
clothes.
Don't
sound reasonable.
Don't sound reasonable, right?
Yeah.
Were you taking voice lessons in high school? Or?
A little bit, yeah. Mm-hmm.
For more, was it jazz focused or more opera? Or?
It was more, the woman that I took lessons with was like, she was more like a Broadway kind of jazz singer. There weren't like a lot of jazz singers in Rochester at the time, but she was probably like the closest thing to that. She was really awesome. She helped me out a lot and then went to jazz school. And
so were you in musicals too? Like doing
I was rejected from musicals.
Really?
Yeah, which was also really horrible.
Yeah.
Goodness.
I know.
You had it.
We're like reliving,
no, but I feel I was also rejected from musicals.
You were?
All
See?
The time. Yeah.
I was rejected too.
I took it to heart.
Yeah.
It's the worst. but you guys eventually got over it. I mean, I don't have the voice that you guys have. It wasn't ever going to be my path, but I still feel that very strongly.
It's super rough.
Yeah.
It's so hard.
Yeah.
You feel so bad.
I feel like in today's culture, I'm surprised they even like cannot cast somebody.
Legally, morally.
Right. Yeah.
Like
exactly.
You have to just be upbuilding
like
everybody.
Find a role for everybody.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
No
I'm sure
rejection.
There are some places that are
right.
like that.
The choruses are just like every kid in school.
Yeah. Yeah. Kids don't learn anything the hard way these days.
No.
No.
I know.
What kind of adults is it going to produce?
I'm really curious.
What are we heading into?
I know.
Yeah. And I for know. So many reasons, too. It's like, what?
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, it's going to be a multitude of issues.
Yeah.
Mm.
Interesting.
Well, we'll have to listen back to this in 30 years and then we'll know the answer.
Where's your family from? Your last name is interesting.
My
Verspril?
Verspril.
Verspril.
Mm-hmm. It's a Dutch version of a French name. So my dad's German and Dutch, but my mom's Italian and Greek. But Verspril is French, but it's filtered through the Dutch.
Like the spelling is different from the original French?
Yeah, like think the original French like didn't have the E or maybe just had one L or I'm not sure.
Okay.
But yeah, my family, they're all like, you can trace that last name back to the 1600s or something.
Cool.
Yeah.
How recently did your family come here? I mean, is that like way back?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. They came here, they all came here like, around the late 1800s, early 1900s.
Are you good on family history?
Kind of good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm pretty
interested. The way that you answer that alone pretty quickly is better than most people can.
I'm pretty interested in it. I recently got more interested in it too. Just like tracing like my mom's family, like yeah. her grandmother and my grandmother, her grandmother, all the way. I found out where they lived in Italy, and they lived in like this little like mountain town.
How did you trace it?
I've looked. You can look, find this stuff online. It's kind of crazy.
You did you have to pay somebody?
No, I didn't. I just found, like, I don't know how. I searched the last names, like the last names of my great grandmother, and then it comes up. The 1940 census just came up online, so you can see
what?
Yeah, you can see like my mom's, my grandma's family, like where they lived in upstate New York, and their names and their ages and their professions, how much money they made.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah. You could find it. I think it's just that 1940 census is just like public record.
Yeah. That's cool.
1940, yeah. like that mm-hmm. specific year, mm-hmm. you're saying? Yeah. So I imagine like any, you know.
Like they were going door to door just yeah. like writing people's names down, which is also so insane.
But how do you go back further than that?
Then I searched, I just found a website. I searched the last name, and then it showed me like, it showed me all the way back to like the early 1800s.
Huh.
And it was like this town, they had come from this one town.
Just by the name alone?
The name, yeah.
But, okay.
It'll be harder with cats, maybe.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
there's actually like a whole mystery in my family that I need to hire like a private detective to figure out.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. It's... All right, ready?
Okay, yeah.
Have I told you this?
I don't know.
When my dad's parents passed away, this was like 10-ish years ago, he was told by the rest of his family that he was adopted.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
What?
Yes.
Oh my God.
That they, because his whole family's from Kentucky. My grandparents moved to Denver-ish, Colorado City, and had him. And then eventually came back to the East Coast. And apparently someone in the family, like a great aunt or uncle, went out there and saw them. And there was a woman who was living with them who was pregnant with my dad. Yeah. It's like a whole scandal. Yeah. So that side of my family discovery? Is like giant question know. Mark. Don't even know.
Wild.
Yeah. And my dad was like so devastated by his parents dying because they died really close to each other that he was all like, my parents are the people who raised me and I don't want to know.
Mm-hmm.
So he hasn't wanted to get into it. But I really want to know.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, who there's knows? Like not a lot to go on from then.
Do you know her 40s, last?
Nobody knows anything about her.
Okay.
Who's still alive. Yeah. Mystery. Total mystery.
Wow.
Anyway, so that's why I'm like.
Talking about that'll never happen again.
Right.
Mysteries like that. Too many records.
That's crazy.
Everything.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Well, I don't know. I mean, could secretly
I guess you
have
could.
A baby at home and yeah, which I think is what happens.
Just don't put it on Instagram.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
The other thing that I knew was there was like I knew their home address from where they lived in upstate New York. And then
okay, yeah.
And then their last name, like their last names for Italian names like weren't that common, I think was another reason why I could kind of go back, but
right.
you should try because if you know, but you don't know her last name.
No, I'm really stumped.
Yeah.
So at this point, I think I'd kind of just want to have one of those DNA tests to know what that side of the family is. But I might never get names or, you know, the but Jewish side of me is like, well, I need her medical records. Yeah. I need to know what diseases are in the family.
Totally.
Yeah. My dad's not Jewish and he doesn't care about that kind of thing. So, anyway.
That's a really cool. I mean, that's really interesting, though.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. I find it interesting. It freaked me out for years and now I'm like, oh, okay.
Maybe your dad will come investigative around, mode. Too. Maybe he'll be like.
Yeah. He started talking about it more lately. So okay. I think maybe we're getting there.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yep.
Yeah.
Anyway,
more details.
Everyone posted. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Anyway, back to you.
Good talk.
Yes.
It makes sense what we were saying about the school stuff and the younger, the sort of like all of these challenges that came up during school. The song Singer is like one of my favorites off the new record.
Thanks.
And part of it is because I can hear your voice so well in a way that's just like kills me. And I love to hear it so up front.
Thanks.
I think you have a beautiful voice. But also the song is just, I mean, it's about, you know, accepting and putting forth the fact that I am this creative person. I am a singer, right? I mean,
yeah.
And so I don't know if that was much of a like true coming around to that and sort of reflecting on the past.
Totally.
And, you know, it's like, feels like you've triumphed.
Yeah, that song is super personal and probably like the most autobiographical song that we have. But yeah, I mean, I feel like it's really hard sometimes. Like, I just wasn't the person that like was like 18 and like going up on the stage being like, well, I know what to do, you know. And it is really hard when you don't know what to do, and you can think, and you start to think that like, oh, this isn't for me, even though you feel so strongly about the fact that you want to do it. And that personal discovery and like that path has really been like, that's been my path. Like, I'm 34 years old, like I'm you know, finally on my second record, and you know, finally playing, feeling, getting on stage and like feeling empowered and feeling like I deserve to be there. And you know, it's just, it's such a it can be so complex emotionally and creatively. And and for me, I'm really lucky because I have Dan, and if it wasn't for our relationship and everything that he brings to the table musically and emotionally for me, like, I don't know if I would have found my way in that way. So that's a big part of it for me. But also just the experience of being like getting up and just trying, even though there are so many times when you're like, this was terrible.
What kept you going then? What did you have someone that was a real support, or was it just like, where did it come from in you to keep going?
You know, it's funny because like Dan and I have been together for 8 years, but we've known each other since 1999, which is when we met in college. So we've always been friends and we've always played music together. But and I've always done music, like, and I think about that because I've wondered that to me. I'm like, what was I, how did I keep going? Like, I just remember like so many traumatic gigs and like hard times. I'm like, why was I just staying on this path, you know? But I think it just has to do with, I always knew deep down that I wanted to, and I love music so much, and I'm so passionate about singing and now about songwriting. But really, like, now it's our relationship that like keeps me on track and like keeping working on it together. And
hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
So
that's nice.
So nice. But,
so it was friendship and then...
And then love.
And then love.
Yeah.
Friendship and then the band and then playing together?
No, it was friendship. We played together in bands.
Okay. Like,
so you friends. Met in take it go to the meeting. So you met in 1999
college orientation.
Yeah, okay. We met at college orientation, in like freshman year, summertime.
Was it like a liberal arts program and there was jazz within it, or was it a conservatory?
It was a state school that has a jazz program in it, so it's like a liberal arts, but then you do your concentration in jazz or whatever. So it's a really small program. There's only like maybe 60 people in the whole program. And I was like one of three girls in the whole thing, which is,
yeah,
I'm sure you know about that. Yeah. So we were just always friends. We were actually roommates our junior year. We had an off-campus apartment together, like totally just buds. And then we played in bands in New York.
Were you a piano player at that time?
No, not really. I mean, I've always played piano, but I consider myself to be like a very just functional keyboard player. Like, I'm not like, I know all the keys and all the chords and stuff, but I'm not like I can't like sit down and like shred piano.
Do you write on it?
Not really. No. Not too much. Okay. I have like in the past, but no Pure Bathing Culture songs have really ever been written in that way. Okay. Yeah, and then we were playing in another band together and that was in New York.
Vetiver?
Nope, this was a band called Josh Dion Band. That was the singing drummer, Josh Dion, who's amazing. And then we were playing in that band together and we just kind of, we think things were like a little weird between us. Like we were kind of like not really sure what was going on. And we basically kind of just talked about it where we were like...
That's very mature.
Yeah. We were like, you know... Really, I think we're in love. You know, Dan was like, I think I'm in love with you.
Like, I like you so much.
Yeah, I really
I must be in love.
Yeah,
with you.
Just like we kind of just like, you know, started talking about it. It was really mature, but it was also really romantic and really beautiful. Yeah, and then we were just together ever since, and that was in 2008.
Awesome.
2008. Yeah. Wow. And so, how these other New York bands? Were you like coming from? Oh no, you had graduated college already.
Yeah.
So you're graduated college, you're living in New York, you're working for Broadway marketing.
Mm-hmm. I only did that for like, until like, I quit that in 2005 to tour with another band.
Was that the last time you had that kind of day job?
And then I worked at the Bitter End. Do you guys know that bar? I worked there as a cocktail waitress.
Okay.
I worked in like another friend's office, just like temp, like filing papers, just random jobs.
Yeah. When were you able to stop?
That when we joined Vetiver.
Okay.
Because it was like really full time touring. Because his records were coming out on Sub Pop and it was just constant. Like he did a lot of touring in Europe. And so, I mean, we were gone all the time for basically from like 2009 until 2012.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So at the time, did the college years sort of strengthen your like confidence? So you're already with. Your at least friendship with Dan.
Yep.
So were you saying to yourself, all right, I'm going to do this. Like, this is all that I want. So you graduate college and you're like this, I have to be in a band. Like,
yeah.
How did the band situation start?
I feel like I put a lot of unnecessary pressure on myself. Like, cause I like getting out of college just being like, well, now I've got to like, go get some gigs, you know, like I had to go like sing gigs, but it's just like,
as a jazz singer.
Yeah. Like, but like, I don't know, you know, that's weird. I don't know what to do. I tried, like I would like play shows and it was really traumatic.
With like
really
a treat, like, and like yeah, jazz
just,
clubs.
Like,
and
yeah. Just like get like my friend Sam, like we tried writing some songs together. Like we played some shows. You guys remember the C-Note? That
the
place.
C-Note. No.
It's been closed for a long time, but it was on Avenue C in 10th.
Oh, yes. Yes.
It was a super dive. We'd play there like all the time.
We're doing all originals?
Some of them, but then like some cover,
like
bunch
jazz
of covers,
standards.
Some
things.
Jazz standards, but like some Prince covers and just like, you know.
Nice.
Yeah. Just weird stuff.
Yeah. Would Dan always play with you?
Most of the time. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, just like getting people together to play. I just feel like when I think about those gigs, they must have been so bad. So embarrassing.
How did it feel in the room,
so
though?
Embarrassing. I don't know. I don't
know.
I was
that
so
bad,
nervous.
Or you would have felt that.
Yeah, true. If
right?
people were like, ugh.
Yeah,
totally. I hope I would have felt that.
That's true. Some people don't, I guess.
Yeah, it's true. But yeah, I guess it just was like, got it. We've got to like, you know, be in a band. And then Josh asked me, or Josh and Dan from Josh Young Band, we're like starting to work on that band, and then they asked me to come and sing backing vocals, and then that band was going for a while, and then my cousin played in Vetiver and he was like, we need a keyboard player. At that time, Dan, when we first joined Vetiver, Dan played bass instead of guitar and then eventually switched to guitar. So it was just kind of like these, it's just like setting, I think I just always set myself up to be able to play music, like whatever it was. That's why I ended up quitting those full-time jobs, being like, okay, I mm-hmm. want to be able to do it mm-hmm. however I can. And then opportunities kind of came
right.
just because I sort of stayed on the path, I guess.
Yeah. How big a band was Vetiver at the time? I mean, it changes. It's Vetiver is still a band.
Yep. Yep.
And it just has different iterations.
He's had lots of different lineups. Like even before we joined the band, he'd probably had two different lineups. So it's just he's always had different people playing with him.
So what was the lineup when you were there?
It was, I played keyboards and sang backing vocals, and then Dan played bass at first. My cousin Otto Hauser was playing drums, and then there was another guitar player named Sanders Tripp, and then Andy.
Okay.
So it was a five piece.
Okay.
And then Dan switched to guitar, and another this guy named Bob Perrins came in and played bass. So it was always a five piece. I think he's a four piece now though. But I'm not sure. I haven't seen the new lineup.
And that was your first experience touring?
Like
extensively?
That. Yeah, totally. Yeah. That was mind blowing.
Were you like, I'm down. This is what it's about?
I liked
or were
it
you
a
like,
lot. Yeah. Yeah. I was nervous too, though, because I'd never played keyboards in a band. So I was like, well, better get a keyboard.
Yeah. I'm the same as you. I'm not as functional as you, but I took lots of piano lessons and I should be better than I am. Playing piano is way more nerve wracking than singing.
Oh, yeah.
For some reason.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
I mean, the idea of like hitting a wrong note or just like totally fumbling and losing your place altogether. I mean, it's really nerve wracking.
The first Vetiver show we ever played was like in a sold out show in Paris. Just like, and it was our first. We had done like two rehearsals in like someone's basement in New York, and then we just like flew to Paris. And I was like, okay, I guess I'll set my keyboard up. Just like plug it in. I was
just diving
so
in.
Crazy. Yeah. Wow. That was crazy. I can't believe I did that.
Had you been to Paris before?
No.
Yeah. So that's cool.
Yeah, it was really cool. So much awesome Europe touring with that band. Yeah.
So you were all over.
Yeah, all over.
Was it mostly North America and Europe?
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's
you
awesome.
You toured with Devendra?
No, not with Devendra. He wasn't in the... We never played with Devendra, but Andy still plays with him.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. So within that time, you and Dan are starting...
Yeah, very slowly.
Relationship.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Starting a relationship.
Okay, starting a relationship.
Yeah. I thought you were
talking
about
what were you talking about?
Well, it's really interesting, and you can tell us how much of a deliberate thing this has been for you, but you don't put out the fact into the public so much, the fact of your relationship. And has that been a conscious move? Have you had to say to yourselves deliberately, like, okay, we want to sort of keep our public image separate from the music? That's not what it's about.
Or, people probably ask you all the time anyway, right?
Yeah, I guess so. But, you know, honestly, though, people haven't asked too much. I mean, I think it's known that we're a couple.
I mean, it's funny. I was Googling a lot last night.
Oh my God.
And it did not
come
up.
And I have to say, like, I watched videos and I was like, I love the music. I was reading some stuff.
She's like,
and
are
I,
they,
and
aren't
I didn't
they?
Know. No, seriously. And I even, you know, what is it? Ivory Coast?
Yeah.
Where you guys kiss?
Yeah.
Okay, and I was like, they might be in a relationship, they might not be in a relationship. I really don't know.
Okay.
And she shakes, like, I mean, a gorgeous video, and, you know, you clearly have, like, an incredible rapport, and you have this intimacy as musicians, but it might stop there as musicians, you mm-hmm. know? So it's interesting that it doesn't, you know, in your interviews and things, it's not in the forefront, and I think there's something really nice about that, and I wonder how much you think of that deliberately.
I mean, I like that too. It's interesting. I haven't thought about it too. I guess we didn't consciously decide that we were going to present it in a certain way.
Or not present it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We weren't
right.
like ever
never
trying to
hiding
hide
this.
It or like, yeah, I think.
We got like, in other words, you're not trying to use it as a hook either. Like this, we're mm-hmm. like this. I don't know if you're, but you know.
But it's funny because I feel like the music is has everything to do with our connection, which is our friendship, but also our love relationship. So it's like, it is, the music really does come from that, you know? So, but yeah.
But we wouldn't necessarily know that.
Right.
Well, yeah. And this leads me to the other question. And I'm curious to know how much you're even interested or following Beyonce's album that just came out and
I'm
the whole
obsessed.
Story with that. You're obsessed.
Yeah.
Obsessed with the music, with the story, with the friends, with the whole thing.
I love Beyonce. Just
the whole thing.
Yeah, I think she's incredible.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I love this, the whole thing. I think what she did with that record was just genius.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
what comparison
I agree. Well, my curiosity is, as a songwriter and as a band member who is in a band with your partner, you know, you're feeling about this sort of expectation of authenticity in writing and in presenting yourself, because I think like part of the frenzy is like, is it true? Is it not true? Is it fiction? Is it real? Like what? So, and what's interesting is not, is it, I don't care about their relationship, but I care about what, does that matter? Like, does it matter to a fan? Should it be, you know, one way or the other? What's the difference? And I'm curious as a songwriter, how you feel about presenting, like, so you just said like your music is very authentic to who you are as a couple and as people. And, you know, if you knew that this album were fiction or if you knew that it wasn't fiction, does it change how you feel about it?
The Beyonce record?
Yeah.
It doesn't change how I feel about it, because I feel like she's making an expression that I think is really important, because her message is so clear, and her last record too, which was just basically about empowerment, you know. And this record, this new record, whether or not it's true or whether or not it's about his infidelity or whatever, it's still, the main message is empowerment, mm-hmm. regardless of like where it comes from. And so to me, that's really authentic, and that's a huge part of who she is and what her message is. So
yeah, I mean, so if there's all of this stuff surrounding it that might be leading the audience to believing something that might not be true, that's beside the point.
I mean, I kind of think so, because yeah. it's really just about someone having a personal experience. And like, obviously, if it comes out as like, it wasn't true, like people could be really bummed. But also, I feel like it's just, the message of it is just so strong.
Right.
And it's really an important thing to be saying. Like, if someone's treating you badly, like, talk about it, like, have those feelings, you know? So, I mean, who knows? Like, even if it's not about specifically about her relationship, she may have had an experience like that in the past.
Exactly.
You know?
Right.
I understand what you're saying, though.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
I'm very curious about this whole thing, because I think it was brilliant and I think it is so interesting, but it's like, it's an art piece as opposed to like a, whereas you are coming, not, you're coming from a place of this is our lives and we're putting it out in this mm-hmm. very sort of sincere way. You have to really dig into the lyrics to understand that it is about your relationship.
Sure.
I didn't, you know, go there, which you can, and that's nice that there are these levels.
Yep.
But with the Beyonce thing, it's this whole experience of like, what, you
know,
so many layers of it, I feel. But that's
yeah.
cool that you're into
really...
it. Have you listened to it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I've watched the video, and
it went away before I haven't bought it.
It's great.
The movie, the short film.
It's really good.
Yeah.
I mean, she's such a powerhouse, and I think so important for women to feel that she's able to be as big as she is and as powerful as she is, and chooses to send this to what to me is an incredible message of empowerment and positivity.
Right.
Although now I have to play devil's advocate.
Yep. Do it.
A lot of her fans are misunderstanding. And this whole thing with the Becky witch hunt awful.
What's the witch hunt?
I mean, they're
like
just
trying to
harassing people online
to find
yeah.
out who it is.
It's so against the message. Yeah. It's cyberbullying.
Cyberbullying.
What they're
yeah,
doing. Like
bad.
The Bayhive is insane. It's really bad.
So to that end, what is the prevention or solution? I mean,
I don't know. I mean, does she have any culpability for that is something that I wonder, you know?
Mm-hmm. I don't feel like she does. I mean, it's part of her music. It's not, you know, is there a person that people are pointing to? Like, do we know who this person is?
People have speculated that it's Rachel Roy, and then there was that whole funny thing that a lot of people, including in my own office, I overheard many people in the hallway that day saying, I can't believe that he would cheat on her with Rachel Ray.
But okay,
same person, which is amazing. So then Rachel Ray started getting bullied online by Beyonce's fans.
Jeez, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a whole other, I think, issue just about, that's more about cyberbullying and social media and how that functions as opposed to
it sadly
her
became a very big story after Lemonade came out, because and a lot of people were just obsessing too much on the whole Jay-Z part of it, which is
that's
not the most important part of it in general.
Right.
Right.
Part of what I was curious too that about your feelings that it's that didn't like overshadow or make you feel like because it was so orchestrated. So the fact of all of this stuff is taking away from the music, like
right.
a little bit.
Sure.
A lot.
I could agree with
you
that.
You know?
Yeah.
And so that I think is maybe something to wonder about.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I really understand what you're saying, because authenticity is obviously so important, and it's a big part of making music and feeling like you're maintaining your integrity in regards to it. And that's so important. I mean, for someone as big as Beyonce, I assume it's important for her too, but like, you know, she is a huge a huge star with like a huge media powerhouse right. behind her. So,
and storytelling can come in different ways. I mean, even just because you're in a happy relationship with your partner doesn't mean you can't write about things
totally
that are not that.
Yep.
You know, and so interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, I just one last point about this, about the Becky thing. Why it really bothers me is because it's very anti-feminist to target the woman who's like not really part of this relationship. You know what I mean? Like, they're not going insane.
You're saying
that
the music that does that.
They're going insane against who they think Becky is. Yeah. I'm just saying.
This is about not her.
Lemonade has been this great feminist tale and it's rallied all these people together and it's wonderful. But then this other byproduct of it is very unfeminist and sad and something that we should also think about. Like, why do we go off the handle about who is the woman that took him away from her?
Definitely.
You know?
Yeah.
Anyway.
It's true.
Yeah.
We can move on out.
Beyonce wouldn't want anyone to do that.
Right?
Yeah.
I hope not.
No.
She could say something though, but maybe she doesn't want to get involved.
Does she say anything these days? Not in a critical way. Not critical. But I mean, she really stays out of it.
Right? But she creates
it. Well, she came to slay, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
No.
No, I mean, I read this the other day, like, you know, like a Cliff's Notes of Beyonce, like if you're not following this whole thing, but like you want to like know what's happening at the water cooler and you're like, if the last time that you heard about Beyonce was like, she's so crazy right now and like tiny shorts, like that was like 13 years ago.
It's true.
Like think about, I mean, this is a newer image, but we feel like it's like who she is, but it's like been an evolution. Certainly.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Anyhow, yeah. Okay.
Anyhow.
So crazy. So you're touring around all over Europe, all over the world with Vetiver. Mm-hmm. And at the time, are you starting to write with Dan? And
we not really on tour, but Dan works on music all the time. He always has had something going. He had a looping pedal at the time. This was in probably 2009. And he had a bunch of songs on there that he was working on that didn't have lyrics. And, he went out to do a show in town and then I was like, oh, there was one on there that I really liked. And so while he was out, I just wrote lyrics to what would eventually become the chorus of the song Lucky One, which is on our EP. And that was the first thing. And so he came home and I was like, oh, I did this. And he was like, whoa, cool. And then we finished the song together, like lyrics and like fleshed out the rest of the form and everything. And then we had written that song.
Was that like a nice moment? Like, do you look back? Can you like think of that time and be like, wow, that was like our first song?
Yeah, it's crazy. It is crazy to
it's
think
like
about.
You can, it was really like a moment.
Yeah, it was. And also like we didn't know what we were doing, you know, like we are, I feel like we've just gotten to the point where we're able to kind of figure out what our process is and like how it actually works between us, because it's intense working with your partner. And it's like a lot of, it can be crazy because you have your life together, but you're also trying to work together and there's just all this
stuff. And how do you
stuff.
Be critical and
yeah,
disagree?
And it's hard. So it's taken us all these songs, I feel like now we're just started writing for a new record that we're really able to kind of work quicker and work more efficiently with each other because we've had the experience of kind of going through mm-hmm. all of these songs where it's like, whoa, remember that one? Yeah, it was hard.
Yeah. Like, now you have shorthand.
Yeah, we can kind of like move quicker, but
yeah. That's for writing a next album or for this?
Yeah,
past
no,
one?
The one we're working on another one.
Oh, another
yeah.
one.
No.
Great. All right.
Yeah.
That's three. Yeah.
Sweet.
Yeah. Yeah. Excited. But yeah, so then that song we just had that song on like a tape machine, and Richard Swift, who's a good friend, and we met him through Vetiver. We toured in his band a little bit. He came out to the East Coast to play some shows, and he asked us if we would join him for those shows, and so we did. And he was staying at our house, and we were like, oh, we've been working on these little this song or whatever, and we played it for him, and he was like, that's really cool. I'll totally record you guys if you ever want to come out to Cottage Grove and record. And we were like, okay, cool. We better write some more songs, like, if we want to do that, because that sounds awesome.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, then we wrote probably Silver Shores Lake right after that, and then both Ivory Coast and Gainesville, which are the other two songs on the EP, we wrote in Portland. So,
oh wow, you were like already there, already recording, and you just needed to write more.
Needed to write more songs, yeah, because it wasn't. It has not gone fast. I'll tell you, that's definitely true. Like we were not fast with it.
You wouldn't know that, yeah, with how many albums you have in the number of years.
Well, it feels. I guess maybe it just feels slow to us because we're like always freaking out, but. Yeah, that thank you.
Yes,
yeah.
Nice. Numerically unqualifiedly fast.
Did the name Pure Bathing Culture inform music at all? Like I love it when a name like really evokes something that you're like, it like sets this whole totally. Foundation for it. So did you find that name and then say, oh, let's sort of stick with this, or was it more like, oh, that name really fits because this is the music we're making? I mean, I would imagine it's the latter.
Yeah, the name really came to us like it found us. It was really weird. And I feel like that's another aspect of just doing this band and all the music that's happened. Like it really feels a lot of times like it's happened to us and we're kind of stewarding it in this way.
Because, the whole project? The whole
because
band.
we just wrote a song together and now we're going to record. And I guess like everything that has happened has just sort of... It's sort of like just stewarded us along in this way. I feel like we haven't forced a lot of it, and you know, a lot of it's felt hard, but it hasn't been something that we were like, you know, going crazy. Like, you know,
you didn't have to pound the pavement
exactly.
And like,
yeah,
go through
like,
all the hurdles.
It just
seems.
Kind
just
of like flat. We've had it. I mean, it hasn't always been easy, but you know. I'm generalizing a little bit.
But I mean, you were on a record label pretty quickly after you like had the EP ready. And
we put the EP up on Bandcamp and like 2 days later, Jesse from Father Daughter was like, I'll put this out. And we were like, okay, like it's really.
But it's not. No, it wasn't just on. You had to pitch it or something.
No, it was on Bandcamp and she wrote to
us. Wow.
Okay.
Yeah. Like super weird.
Super awesome.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Well, it does. And then there's like amazing stories like that. That's awesome.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you do the work and then you hope that something crazy fortuitous like that will happen.
Yeah. And you heard about like, I mean, yeah, people are discovered on YouTube and it was on MySpace, but like just put something up on Bandcamp and then, oh.
Yeah.
I think we were in Europe with Vetiver and like in Brussels or something. And she emailed us. She was like, I really like this.
Wow.
Yeah.
And then, so can you tell us about Ivory Coast?
Yeah.
Video.
Oh, the video? Yeah.
Well, and the song. But
I
the
just
video,
watched the
video. Did you watch that video? Oh, my God.
I don't remember that video.
The cutest
the little, blue
little thing and the cutest hologram shark falling around. And your videos are so fantastic.
Thanks.
And I don't know if that probably feels like also this wave of just like awesome things coming to you, because I can't imagine like directors like you've worked with and like imagery and vision that you have for these videos. It's like that doesn't happen, you know, all the time. It's really.
Thanks. We really, that video is made by Sean Pecknold, who is amazing. He's made a lot of beautiful stop motion animation videos, particularly for the Fleet Foxes. And he's an amazing artist, but he was living in Portland at that, like around that time. And we met him and, we really wanted to work with him and he was like, really loved that song. And, and we worked together on the plot and filmed it on the Oregon coast. It was freezing cold, but I just watched that actually for the first time in a really long time, like on Saturday, because I was with some friends and they wanted to watch it, and I haven't seen it in years.
And how did it make
it
you feel?
I was like, it was overwhelming to me. Like I was like, oh my God, it's kind of hilarious. Like,
Hilarious. My boyfriend and I
kind of forgot.
We watched it like three times. Your faces. He was like, just rewind to her faces. Like it's so funny and sweet and endearing. It's just
Thanks.
Like it's wonderful. Yeah,
I love it too. It means a lot.
Yeah,
it was a wonderful team of people and friends that worked on it together, and it really felt magical at the time, and I'm really proud of it. So,
do you remember like what the pitch of like this little blue guy and this little shark like what?
It was alien sea god falls in love with and impregnates mortal woman, and then she has an alien baby, and then she gives it back to him in like an incredible, epic, beautiful tragedy.
And you guys were like, yes.
We're like, that's very good. That's very, very good. Yeah.
Awesome. Do you remember at the time, was it like, did that video do a lot of things for you?
Yeah, I think a lot of people, you know, it's funny because at the time, it's not like when it came out, it didn't feel like some sort of like crazy thing. But now I hear from people more, like people come to shows and they talk about the video, they'll be like, I love that video. So
it was more in your fan base than like sort of a critical.
I think so. Yeah. I mean, I feel like for us, I mean, we've had some really good critical coverage and stuff, but we've really been, you know, working hard and playing shows and just trying to find the people.
Yeah. Are you a very visual person?
What do you mean?
Like in that way, like, do you also feel like you have kind of, like a visual artist's brain?
I love
proclivity for that.
I like to do watercolors and I like to draw weird animals and stuff.
Uh-huh.
But that's sort of newer for me.
Yeah.
But
what about like filmmaking stuff? You know, like
I haven't delved too much.
Yeah.
But I do think about colors a lot.
Uh-huh.
And I really, like recently we just the other night we saw a Beach House play in Portland, and they're amazing, and their light show was so amazing because they would do a change in the lights, and the color that they chose for the song was like, every time it would change color, I'd be like, that's the perfect color.
That's the color of that song.
Like, of course that's green. Oh my God. Yeah, it was like so amazing.
That's awesome. That's how Dream the Dare is too. There are other I was so nerding out on the videos last night. Dream the Dare is an exquisite stop motion video with the colors to die.
Yeah, Haley Morris. Yeah, she's
unreal.
Amazing.
With like reflections and
so you know what's cool?
Projections.
We're on this new platform, Acast,
yeah.
And we can add links to videos throughout the podcast.
Dream the Dance, Ivory Coast.
As we're talking about this,
she shakes.
I will add links to all these videos so you guys can see exactly what we're talking about.
There That's awesome.
Yeah. It's fun.
Yeah.
I'm so glad you like them. I love that video too. I watched that too because the other day for the first time. So she built all of that, all those set pieces, and she worked really hard on it. It's so beautiful.
It's exquisite. And I mean, was that again, like not a searching, like, oh, we need this like gorgeous video. It was like, it kind of happened.
She was a friend of Sean Pecknold's who made the Ivory Coast video, and he connected us with her, and
you can't get, I mean, it's so lucky.
We talked about
so
it, and she just, I mean, she crushed it. Yeah.
It's weird how they say it's like the age of the music video is dead, but at the same time, everything is video now.
Do they say that?
Well, I mean, like in terms of like MTV and like that.
It's so funny. Like MTV is.
Yeah. Do people watch
no,
that?
No, like it's, I mean, I think they do for like
other stuff.
Real world or like reality TV.
Reality.
But it is, it's, yeah.
Yeah.
The music video is stronger than ever in a way. Like you
yes.
have to have a video for a song. Like if it's going to go, I mean, for with an album, you need at least a few videos to go along with it. Something to.
Yeah. Just something for people to share.
I mean, and because also YouTube is a way to hear music in a big way. I
right.
think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
People always say that. I always think they'll be like, oh, I'll find you on YouTube.
Yeah.
If I want to find, if I'm at a computer and I don't have like, I'm not going to buy it, or if I'm not on Spotify or something, it's like, you just put it into YouTube. You
yeah.
can hear any song. Does that bum you out?
No, I just don't think, I guess I just haven't thought about it that much.
How do you,
I
mean,
I
guess,
yeah, what's your,
music? Are you like, streaming?
Yeah, I have like, I just got Spotify.
Uh huh.
So I've been doing that.
It changed your world.
It's pretty
amazing.
I mean,
I'm guilty.
You can hear a lot of stuff.
Amazing.
I
love it.
It's you
amazing.
Can really get through a lot of,
right?
You know, a lot of music.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you get paid. Artists get paid from it.
Exactly.
It's not.
They do.
As dire of it. Yeah, they do. You don't. You don't.
I mean,
you don't. You're,
I, don't
I mean, you do, but you yeah. just may not
yeah.
be aware. But yeah.
I do think that that they could do better with paying artists.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. Definitely.
I feel like it's moving that way.
Right.
I feel like it. Yeah.
They're going to have to. Something's going to happen.
Because it is so good.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah. I mean, the flip side is people are exposed to you who never would be
right.
otherwise. So
true.
Yeah. Blessing and a coice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's why I haven't listened to Beyonce, to be honest.
Because you don't want to pay.
I don't want to pay.
Exactly.
Because I can wait.
It's true.
Because I can wait. Like,
right.
It's going to be available to me at some point.
Is there anyone that you
but
would pay
not,
for
yes,
their shit dropped
yes,
today?
I mean, probably.
I don't even know. $17.99, no problem.
Yeah. Which it's like, what's $17.99? Why am I not paying for it? And now I probably will because you've
she shamed
real endorsement.
You.
No.
Public shaming.
That's a good endorsement. So.
All right. So how's it going with the new album?
Great. It's been awesome. Yeah. We were having so much fun playing the songs live. Uh-huh. It's been great.
How does it feel different from the first to be playing it?
We used to play with drum tracks. Okay. So we had like, because Dan makes a lot of the beats on drum machines. Uh-huh. And so, and when we first started playing our first shows, we were a trio with drum tracks and just bass, guitar, and me playing keyboards. Mm-hmm. So we added a drummer probably a year after we started playing live. And he would play with some drum tracks that we just had on an MP3 player, like no like crazy tracks or anything. Mm-hmm. But so we were doing that for a long time. But then with the new record, it was really a lot more minimal, I think, than our first two records in terms of just, it was just more impactful, sort of more hard hitting, and things were more upfront. And we were kind of able to keep electronic elements with, he still has a drum pad, so those sounds are still there that are a big part of, I think, the sound of the band, and a big muse for Dan on the drum machine. He loves making drum machine beats and stuff. So we still have that element, but without the tracks, it's made things a lot more dynamic. Mm-hmm. It's a lot, it can be a lot more, there's not that like static sound that's always there. So it's changed the way we have been able to play. I feel like we've been able to kind of be a lot more out there with just a lot more impactful live. So awesome. It's been really fun.
Awesome.
Yeah. How was the tour with Lucius?
It was amazing. Oh. Oh my God. I love them so much.
It seems like a really a good fit.
Yes. And they're incredible. Yeah. And they're amazing people. And we had known a few of them from New York because they used to live here and they live in LA now. But and so we known them for a little while. And when they asked us to go out with them, we were just so excited. I mean, it was great. The shows were amazing.
Yeah.
All sold out. People were super into it. So it was fun.
Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess it makes sense when you find that really good fit that way for touring, because then if they come out for them, they're probably going to love you guys too. So it's just like automatically doubling the audience.
It was cool. I mean, it was one of the tours that we've done where people would come up and be like, I thought that this was such a great combo. Like people really responded to it. And we got to do, I got to sing with them and Dan played on their encore. We did an encore of Can't Help Falling in Love with You in three part harmony, which was just like
awesome.
So
to
fun.
Die.
So good.
So good.
Yeah.
So tell me, because I am going to be turning 34 this year, as are most of my friends that I know from college and stuff. And we've been talking lately about, okay, bracing for our mid-30s. What does that mean to us?
Welcome.
So how is it? How is it up there?
I think it's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really do. And
did you have any feelings about it?
You know, I haven't had a lot of feelings about my 30s.
Yeah, in general.
In general.
Not even turning 30?
Yeah, it didn't bother me. Like, I was kind of like, you know, I mean,
didn't bother you and didn't feel particularly good either. It was just kind
of
a neutral.
Kind of like, I was like, you know, obviously I'd rather turn 30 than not turn 30. Like, you know,
that's so what
like,
I always said. Like, yeah. Like, beats the alternative.
Duh. Yeah, exactly. Like, this is pretty cool to keep living life.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess like in the music industry where it's like definitely, you know, it's very, I think it's pretty youth driven, and mm-hmm. we'll meet other bands and I'll realize that they're like, I could have babysat them, you know, and like whatever. And you're like, whoa, crazy.
Is the music industry very youth driven?
I mean,
interesting.
I feel like in some aspects, maybe not so much in like the indie world or whatever, but you know,
I mean, if you're trying to make like a pop star.
Yeah,
certainly.
Yeah.
Right. But,
it's not like, I don't know, I guess maybe more just an insecurity from my part. Maybe not so much like speaking generally about the music business, but just kind of being like, whoa, like I'm whoa, crazy,
right?
Crazy to be doing this at this age. Like if I was 25, like would I be, what would this feel like, you know, kind of those kind of feelings.
Mm-hmm.
But mostly just super grateful and excited and happy to be doing it. And if you're like, and I love what I do so much, and I feel like if you have that in your life and you get to continue doing it, that like at any age, I mean, it's supposed to be about joy. Like it's supposed to be about rocking and rolling and like feeling really good and and doing what you love. So yeah.
It's good.
Cheers to 34.
Cheers to 34.
How many days of the week do you have that much perspective on it? How many days are like anxiety and
a lot of anxiety,
pushing yourself?
Yeah, a lot of anxiety, okay. For sure. Yeah, a lot of anxiety. Yeah,
also want to make sure we're not alone.
Yeah. A lot of anxiety, and also it's really not as easy to be hungover as it used to be.
Yeah,
like it's
that
like,
is also how a do common guys tour, theme on you, this podcast.
Yeah, for sure.
I just
do
like,
you guys try to?
I do not drink on tour, like pretty much at all. I can't do it.
Yeah, no. And sing the next day.
Yeah, yeah. It's really hard.
Yeah. Who has those days to spare?
You can't. And yeah, it's like, why?
Right.
Yeah.
It sounds like the opposite of the rock star life that you know, the cliche.
I know.
Yeah, but it's the constant disappointing, like right. behind the scenes tale. Yeah. We stopped having fun.
Yeah. I was like, I had allergies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I'm back there. Like I have like tea. I have one of those vocal steamers. Yep. I'm just like back there, like having tea, like using my steamer.
Sitting in the-
just like everyone's like our band's super chill. Everyone's like reading or like whatever. It's funny.
It's so real.
Yeah.
It's so real. No,
like, it's been such
like the most relatable
experience.
Thing you've said all day. Yeah. Well,
amazing.
Yeah.
So you guys are going to play a song for us?
Oh yeah.
All right. What are you going to play? Do you know?
I think we'll probably play Pray for Rain.
Okay.
And then maybe we'll play Ivory Coast.
Please.
Okay.
Awesome.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Oh my God. Thank you guys so much for having me. This was such a treat.
Yeah. Seriously. I forgot most of the time that we were doing a podcast, which is good. It's a good way.
Yeah. It was really fun.
Great way.
Thank you so much. We're Pure Bathing Culture, and this song is called Ivory Coast.
Along the Ivory Coast.
This song's called Pray for Rain.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.